We're gonna drink beers and review some beers. But the thing is, we don't know very much about beers. So this might be a total waste of time. But since it's Thursday night, it's the final countdown.
From our dusty cellars, thinking that if any of those men were truly wise, they'd have brought a rattle or some rusks or something. It's the final countdown. Here's some gold. He's a baby. Here's some frankincense. Baby. Here's some myrrh. Did you say brr? No, myrrh. Oh, sorry. Baby. Likes rusks. Bring dad's keys. Fucking loves that. Loves dad's keys. Peekaboo. Savage. Of course he was into the little drummer boy with his fucking drum. He's a baby.
It made a noise.
Elevate the problem of having a child messiah is that he did elevate the little drummer boy above all of those magi that came.
All of those far so more far skilled drummer boys who had dedicated the middle parts of their lives to drumming.
They endangered their health to throw Herod off the scent. And he's still like, bang the drum again, little drummer. Now, granted, that song was written from the perspective of the boy himself.
Well, this was called like, They Told Me. Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, do you ever hear the drummer boy referenced anywhere outside of the song sang by him?
Yeah, that's true. Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John are not giving the little drummer boy his props.
He doesn't come up in the synoptics. He doesn't even come up in the extra canonical, whatever the one that means, it means they're not in the Bible.
Extra canonical, yeah, sure.
It's something like that.
Apocryphal.
I mean, that is a word that I used to hear a lot, but I only ever heard it to do with, it's extra something. Apocryphal is probably accurate too.
Apocryphal, is that like when you see, you know, like Archangel Gabriel wearing a wristwatch?
That's anachronistic.
Like, oh, that couldn't possibly be. Oh, come on.
I think he does appear in some of the spin-off books. Like he's in the.
I mean, all the Bible's apocryphal, isn't it? I mean, unless you think it happened. Like, nobody thinks it happened. The Pope doesn't think it happened. If you talk to the Pope, he's like,
yeah.
Listen, it's a good story, right?
It's a great, listen, hey, look at my hat. That's what the robes are about. They knew the Protestants were not onto something when they decided to go purely by what it says in the Bible. The Pope was like, have you read that thing? Listen to me. Don't read the thing. We keep that in Latin for a reason. If you try to live by that thing, Jesus.
There's
some not okay stuff in there that's actually okay. And some okay stuff in there that's not okay.
Now, back to our... I mean, I'm not saying everything the Pope ever did was great, you know.
No.
Most of it, you know, pretty good. Good hat.
Yeah, he's got the hat nailed down. And actually, the hat's probably why they got away with a lot.
Hey, look at the rose, look at the gold cross. Can't stare out the window, you're still looking at God. It's made of God. Shiny God colors and everything. Not looking out the window, doing the Stations of the Cross. There you go. I'm Manus Cronin. Joining us this week, as always, it is a shame his parents aren't the Irish police, since at least he never lets his guard down. Jack Toner.
Good.
That's pretty good, yeah.
His Italian friend Claudio shares a name with that breakfast cereal for bad weather. James Belfast.
Claudio's.
Oh, yeah.
That's good. Nice.
I was waiting for a surname, which would be a pun, but then I just realized it was right there in front of me.
Yes, it was. That terrible Claudio joke was his idea. Gavin Carvery.
Manus, is that the intro you said that one of us wouldn't like? Because I do not like that.
Hey, I mean, why would I answer that question? That could incriminate me. on the agenda this week, we are talking about a thing. I can't remember what it was. Apparently, we were all supposed to watch it. Jack did.
No, I don't think we were all supposed to watch. I highlighted something that I thought Ben Clifford would get down on and Jack Toner would get down on. Ben Clifford has not responded positively, so I assume he hates it. And Jack has responded positively. So Ben isn't on this week.
Ben may not have hated it. He may just be sorry it wasn't his idea. I do that sometimes. Somebody comes up with a good idea. I wish I thought of it. I poo-poo it right away. Hope to recalibrate it, reformulate it, convince you I thought of it. Come on. They said I lack leadership potential in the civil service. They were wrong. That's what leaders do. They take some credit. But before we get into any of that, we have beers today. Most people even seem to have them.
Fucking crazy. Got, what the fuck is going on?
That's giddily
wild.
On.
We are wilding.
What do we got?
Gav, I think we have the Voodoo Ranger New Belgium Juicy Haze IPA.
Oh, yeah. Imperial IPA?
Yeah.
Is there any other IPA?
It's like a 7.5%.
Yeah.
Do we not have the same beer?
Jack, you were given one.
I have the same as Jack.
God damn it. I don't thought I fucked up. Damn it.
Gavin, the majority aren't always right.
Now, it also, in my defense, I texted into the group the beer that I have this morning. So Jack got the wrong beer and somehow managed to fail upwards.
No, because you said the Voodoo Ranger New Belgium IPA.
And then I went back to Imperial IPA.
Yeah, he said that Imperial IPA. He for sure said that.
I thought this was one of the ones
that I got on my big order from Craft Central a few weeks ago that I listed on the group. So this was the first one to be.
Gav, basically, I was right so long ago, it doesn't matter that you might have been right today.
You failed upwards, Gav. Belgium. You have for throughout your life.
Thank you. Imperial Thank IPA. You. Thank you, both Gavin and Structural Inequality.
So, yeah, I fucked up. What do you guys think of your beer?
Pouring it out looks good. Gav, I will say that I actually got as many of the beers on that list as I could have, and I just before the show I actually had that margarita beer.
Oh yeah,
that shit's hot fire.
Damn, that's a good beer.
That's a great beer. I got it because you were so happy with it. Everyone loved it, and I was just like, I gotta get in a piece of that action. And here I am, having had a great time.
Yeah, it's dynamite. I think Howard Helen said that he got it as well, and he's like, damn, that's a fucking tasty beer.
Yeah, Howard Helen also reached out to me last week on something, and frankly I don't think it had actually been long enough since I had heard from Howard Helen. So Howard, if you're listening,
a year or two.
It had only been a year or two, Gavin, is really what I'm saying. And Howard, if you could leave it, let's schedule something in, let's pencil something in sort of end of 2023.
Jack, if you wanted to happen at the end of 2023, shouldn't you promise to do it tomorrow?
No, if I want it to happen tomorrow, I should promise to do it today. But if I want it to happen in 2023, I should just forget it ever was a plan entirely. Cancel the plan I do make for 2023, day of, and then do this.
In what way is that different from you promising to do it tomorrow? They sound like the same steps.
That's very true.
Well, no, the second one has him screwing over someone else further down the line.
Ah, yes. Yeah.
I should promise to do something tomorrow.
Beer-wise, my one is 9% and it tastes every drop of it. It is
7.5. Beep. Likewise.
Yeah, you're definitely getting the alcohol through here. Overall, it's fine. I don't hate it, but it's not really doing anything to wow me either. It's, nothing too remarkable either way. It's quite an ordinary beer, I think.
Mm. Well, yeah, to have those, okay.
Yeah, to remind you what good beer out of pedestrian effort every now and then. Like the Imperial is actually pretty nice. It's kind of full of flavor. It's quite hoppy and bitter and all that good stuff. But the overwhelming taste is booze. And I'll be honest, guys, it's not the Monday night that I wanted to have a 9% beer.
I was like, very bundled.
I'll just pull whatever out. I'll just stick it in the fridge and think about it later. Fuck.
For the joy of the listener, Gavin is wearing his coat and scarf, meaning he's probably just in from something way too cold right now or has somewhere to be after.
This is a dressing gown and I'm way too cold. It's been a cold day, but mostly it's been a windy day. And my flat, just like the wind, just cuts through it like a hot knife through ass.
You do know you can close the windows, right?
Ah, James, where were you 10 hours ago?
In my house, what you closed windows.
With that hot knife you had. I sleep in a big bed with my wife. Does Imperial just mean boozy?
Strong. I think it just means strong. Yeah.
Like, it means strong if you're like British Imperial 1850. It doesn't mean strong if you're like Nicholas II 1916, does it? That should be like a non-alcoholic beer, frankly, for a week. It's a precarious IPA.
Precarious IPA.
Or like, yeah. If we ever do create an Final Countdown branded beer after Dirty Dublin Confidence, we'll just bring out a range that are all called Imperial IPAs. Yeah. And then they'll just be labeled underneath. This is a Nicholas and it's 2%.
I mean, if we're going to be, yeah, we should base the alcohol content on their percentage chance of lasting the next month without some sort of peasant revolt. If we're going to sell no beer, we might as well be big fucking dweebs about it, actually. So
it would be the most entertaining beer naming in a long time. People are like, yeah, we came up with a cool name in the bar when we were thinking about it. He's like, no, we had a high concept naming strategy and it was all based on
it's designed to trick
you. Yeah. Yeah, I think that's the move. I don't think we discuss this anymore. I think that's perfect.
Yeah, we're done.
Put a pin in it.
All right, let's bottle it, sell it, see you back here next week.
This Fanta Lemon is disappointing.
Fanta Lemon often is, because Manus, let me tell you what you want. Club Lemon.
Yeah, it was there as an option. I don't know why I didn't take it.
You think it was skunks?
They were beside each other.
You know what? It goes San Pellegrino, Club, yeah. Fanta Lemon.
Yeah, I'd agree with that. There's like,
it's very close at the top.
Sometimes I think the only difference between San Pellegrino and the less fancy things is just that it's really, really fizzy and it actually hurts when you first taste it. So you're like, oh God, this San Pellegrino.
Oh, a lemon beverage should sort of hurt. You should know you're drinking a lemon. Yeah, yeah. This is too sweet. This is just like, this could be anything. My memories of Club Lemon as a child were like,
tear the face off your lemony, yeah.
Which is what this should be.
San Pellegrino is so fizzy, it has to put an extra little cap on top to stop the fizz getting out.
Yeah, either that's not necessary and they're pretentious arseholes, 90% that's what it is, or it's completely necessary and all of the other can people are just fucking with our safety.
Rat piss. It's wall-to-wall rat piss, man. So I hate to break it to you.
Yeah.
And yeah, it will cost them 0.01 cent to not have you drink a little bit of rat piss, and they're not willing to spend that.
Every day they choose not to spend that and have you drink rat piss.
That's why they spend all that lobbying money on the rat piss inspectors.
God,
that's design a few RPIs, and then suddenly you don't have to worry about putting that little tinfoil hat. That's also why they've given the bad name of tinfoil hat people to like lunatics, because they don't want to like put good associations with the little tinfoil hat. It's all out there in the ether.
It's all out there. I mean, if you read it, if you just like Google anything, you can find truth, you know?
The internet is fantastic.
Just like look at the internet, like you'll find something, you know?
Yeah, I'm fairly sure. See, Facebook and Twitter now sort of curate content. Like they now sort of, if something gets too crazy, they try and take it off and so that you don't get fucked by it. I think they've got to go all the way if they're doing that, though, because at the moment I still see some pretty wacky stuff. And given that I now know that they're editing for content, I'm like, oh, well, that must have been fine. It passed the Facebook test. It's true now.
And yeah, there's not a standard of truth across platforms either. So what Twitter thinks is objectionable, Facebook might not. So like, yeah, you are kind of muddying the waters. It's better than doing nothing, but it's still a cesspit from which no good can come.
I'm not sure it's better than doing nothing. I think the best thing to do would be I think it is worse than doing nothing and being very clear that you're doing nothing. Like fucking broadcasting it from anywhere that will listen. By the way, nothing on here. We're making no claims about whether any of this is true. This could all be bollocks. In fact, assume it's bollocks. That would be better than what they're able to do, which is to just, I guess, getting the most egregious. It just adds a veneer of truth to like stuff that's not true, you know? If I think they're curating it. Like, no, I guess we should have a certain caution with like anything, even newspaper or whatever. But I certainly do get, I was like, oh, well, the Irish Times wouldn't probably, you know, if it wasn't, there wasn't, you know, maybe something to it. Granted, in the opinion page, maybe you might.
Yeah.
But in the actual news, you
assume that a national newspaper has a certain editorial standard where they've they've checked their sources. What they're reporting is close to the truth.
It's cleared a hurdle, you know, one way or the other.
I think that Facebook and Twitter doing absolutely nothing and then claiming openly that they're doing nothing, like, is too open to bad actors just being like, oh, I can do whatever I want. Fucking slick. I am going to, you know, pump a bunch of money just essentially putting out propaganda and there's nothing that can be done about it, you know?
There's a bigger, wasn't actually what I was trying to get at when I brought this up, but there is a bigger thing going on. And it used to be something that a lot of left-wing authors and commentators understood, which was that as public space becomes private, now I'd only ever read it in the context of like the town square being replaced by a shopping mall, for example.
Yeah.
The realm of what you can censor or what is prudent to be allowed. So like, I should still be allowed to hand out pamphlets in the Dundrum Town Centre, given that the Dundrum Town Centre is now, even though it's now private property. And it was for very good reason, because there was stuff like Disney owning towns and stuff, and suddenly public discourse was not public anymore, and there's no rule to say you couldn't do certain stuff. I think it's something that that certainly isn't analogous to the cyber space, but there's something there.
Yeah, I get what you mean. Like, there's an argument that on the one side that Twitter and Facebook are being too censorious with right-wing opinions is something I have read. It's not something that I necessarily believe. And then there's the argument in the other camp, which is they're private companies. That's not censorship. Censorship is when the government stops your speech. However, in the online space, we've never had, you know, other than kind of the internet itself and the wires on which the internet is built, there has never been a public space. Yeah. It's all been private since day one. So, if more and more of our time is spent on the internet, what does that mean? And what are we entitled to as a citizenry, you know, and across borders as well? It gets even more complicated. What are you entitled to on a platform that works in 200 different countries with 200 different, freedom of speech or, you know, hate speech laws or anything, you know? It's all like mind bendingly complex. And
my worry would never be that.
I know that does, the Dundrum Town Centre does sound analogous, but I don't think it even is, because at least that Dundrum Town Centre was a field at one point, that, or a town square that was owned by no one or owned by the state for its citizens. In this, we there's no before. So things it's are just new, being made up as we go.
Space. It's a new space with new rules.
And in many ways, it's my space.
MySpace, right?
which brings me back to my main point. Guys, check out my MySpace. I'm bringing it back.
I'm still really trying to just make MySpace happen. Yeah.
But I don't shed any tears that, like, say, an Alex Jones doesn't have a Twitter account anymore. That doesn't bother me.
Yeah,
you know,
yeah.
I mean, it's, you know.
Same
but,
with Gemma O'Gardy and the rest. Like, I just
yeah,
like,
I mean.
At a certain point, you are responsible for what you do on these platforms. And,
yeah.
I think it's actually boils down to, like, the internet is in and of itself a public space. Like, that's arguable because internet service providers are very shady and powerful. And I think there's many parts of their relationship with our access to this, like, utility that's very questionable. But, like, Twitter is basically just a microphone. Facebook is basically just a microphone. And if you happen to own a soapbox and a bullhorn, and you're offering other people to shout into it, you always have the ability to pull the mic away from their mouth and be like, no, no more for you. That's not infringing on your freedom of speech.
Yeah, but that, like,
my microphone.
But that doesn't hold up either. Not really. I get it, but like it's like the argument, I suppose, to give that a proper argument is that, like, well, you are free to set up a social media platform of your own,
and they have. What's that right wing Twitter that they've set up, like Pan? Yeah, there's a right wing Twitter that they've set up as well, called like Panther or something, or something.
Of course,
weird.
Look, I'm not bleeding for the right wing people here. Okay?
No,
I don't care about them because I disagree with them. It's like I care about potentially me in the future. I care about potentially. I've never thought that, like, multinational corporations were going to responsibly arbitrate for what allowable discourse is. And the point is, I can go and make whatever their version of Twitter is. I have that right, and you could read any law you might write in that framework and see that's fine, because you can just go and get your own bullhorn and your own platform, but like that right is so useless to me that I'm
I might
as well give it up. I might as well give up my freedom to do that for in exchange for a biscuit, because it is of no good to me.
But you assume that right kicks into effect as soon as Twitter and a Facebook start to exert their power of let's call it censorship, though I don't necessarily believe it is.
Hang on. Whether you believe it's allowed or not, it is censorship.
It is censorship.
There's no definition of it that it isn't that. It's not necessarily a problem, but
when they, censorship, editorializing, whatever you like, their platform, their rules, maybe it's okay now that it's like Alex. First, they came for Alex Jones, and I didn't cry because I wasn't Alex Jones. Does there come a point where the platforms exert their power on a large enough proportion of people to where that right to start a new Twitter or to start a new Facebook does become a real possibility, you know?
You're kind of talking antitrust stuff, really, if you're talking about any way you could regulate that sort of thing. Would be that, like, you would literally have a... And it wouldn't work nationally. You need to almost be supranationally. So a body like the EU, a country...
And the EU are looking into antitrust against Google at the moment. And, you know, Facebook and the likes are likely to come. Not Twitter and Snap, I'd say, because they're too small. But Facebook and Google are definitely in the firing line for...
And you could start to see why money tends to go towards trying to destabilize anybody that could do something like that. So, and you sort of see that when you see where the money was with Brexit and with other stuff that's just trying to destabilize an actor that is large enough to do something like that.
So wait, Mams, are you kind of implying that that the tech giants would have been in favor of Brexit and would have
not necessarily? No, I'm actually not specifically talking about them. Although I am talking about it's the same anti-federal government thing that you see in the US. It's where money is. For the most part, or where capital is accumulating in huge amounts, and we used to have a thing we did for that, albeit ineffective a lot of the time. And it was something like antitrust, because it doesn't. Even if you're a market purist, you can see that perverse incentives start to take over as soon as you have size differentials that are that big. You know, you're no longer you're no longer assigning resources based on the value of the thing being done.
Anti-competition law is that I think that antitrust and anti-competition law, as is defined at the moment, only really kicks in when it starts to negatively affect the consumer, and when the consumer is getting everything that the company is offering for free, it's hard to argue a case that like Google has monopoly power, where it's like, well, it's you know, its service is free, but you know, as everyone
how do you argue that they're harming the consumer on like a subconscious level, and the consumer disagrees and wants it, but it's kind of harming them, really.
You might have to redefine.
Can't really make that point.
You 100% have to redefine, because the people who it's harming monetarily are advertisers, and it's actually not harming advertisers just yet. There might come a point where it does. You'll 100% have to redefine, because I think antitrust and anti-competition law is too narrow in its scope at the moment, and doesn't fit into a system where the consumer is the product.
I think you could get bogged down too much by focusing on that I brought up antitrust. It's more that type of mechanism that observes when something dominates, whether it be a traditional market or whether it be a market of ideas, when something dominates it that much,
apart from Twitter,
that there is value in with as light a touch as possible, but with some sort of intervention there. And I just, anytime anyone who could possibly be listening to this is thinking about this stuff and thinking it doesn't matter, or thinking it's that's only this, that, or the other that I don't agree with, just do keep in mind that any progressive idea I can think of that we, I think, all love and would advocate for, 30 years ago, similar situation, probably getting censored out of stuff. Something like Facebook were to have existed, a lot of the progressive stuff we like would probably not have seen the light of day on it.
I'm struggling with that. But like, give me just one example on that.
So you're like Reddit 30 years ago. You're going to be brigaded by R the Margaret, a Thatcher fan subreddit.
Go.
I think you just need to look. If you look at where institutional power was, maybe 30 years ago might be too near. Although 1990, probably not. I would say you would probably have found a lot of LGBTQ stuff would have found itself caught in the net of censorship on the basis of it being pornographic, whether it was or whether, of course, we wouldn't think it was. You're not putting yourself in the mind of somebody of a major corporation CEO who's probably 70, in 1990. And what I think progressive ideas are always going to fall victim to that type of censorship. I think they probably did. But fortunately, there was, although there was, there's a huge difference between the Irish Times and a zine I put out in my basement, right? It is dwarfed by the difference between Twitter and anything I could start today.
And anything you start today would have to go through Twitter and Facebook. It's just how you find, it's Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, whatever. It's how you find an audience today as well. So yeah, if they're making calls on what is right and what is wrong, that far, you know, I think that like the Overton window is something that is discussed in political terms in terms of like what's acceptable speech. And like, it might not be a bad, and I'm shooting from the hip here, so I haven't thought about it at all. It might not be a bad thing to consider in terms of what is allowed or isn't allowed on social media. Like, you know, there are certain bounds within which we know ideas and speech kind of are, I don't know, shared or disagreeable or something. You can kind of disagree civilly, and that's kind of moving constantly. And maybe that's something that like needs to be considered when regulating the social media giants.
I've thought of a better example. Can you say stay away from my son again? Because I thought of a better thing to say. The year is 1985. We're figuring out what AIDS is.
Hold on. Let me set the scene a little bit. Hey, stick on Cool in the Gang again. No. Oh man, this microwave popcorn is amazing. This is the best thing they've ever invented. I don't know when microwave popcorn came up.
Gavin, I'm trying to stick it on. Just let me rewind this cassette. Got to turn it over.
Hey. Jack's got a record player. I'll hop in my DeLorean and go see him.
Perhaps it's a different year. Perhaps it's not 1985. I don't want to nail myself down in my ignorance of the progression of the AIDS virus. Or the AIDS wasn't the virus, but the AIDS syndrome, I guess. HIV was the virus. I can certainly see, had a similarly sized entity such as Facebook or Twitter existed, with the prevailing moral thought from the 1980s, something like, hey, gay men seem to be specifically at risk to this. It seems to be particularly receptive anal sex, and condoms seem to prevent it. So lads, if you're shagging, wrap up, you know, right? Perfectly important thing to be able to get across. I could see that being censored.
Because it implicitly endorses
It doesn't just say, don't be gay. Certainly don't have sex if you are, you know, which would have been the mainstream message.
But here's what I do like about, I don't think that I like it in general, but what I do like about it is that it doesn't stop you from saying it. It just puts a little tag on the end, which says this might not be true. And if you are outside of the establishment version of thinking, as you are in the sort of 1985 AIDS example, you don't trust the platform, but you can trust the speaker.
I think you'd probably find, Jack, and maybe you probably know a lot more about the machinations of it than I do. I think stuff is straight up getting deleted off things, though. I don't think it's just putting a little tag saying it. If you're the New York Post or whatever, then yeah, I'm fairly sure they do just put a little thing and go, this might not be true. But if you're small enough,
I mean, things can get reported for breaking.
I mean,
terms
people's pages straight away are gone.
People's pages can be deleted and people's accounts.
Just gone and you can't come back. And right now, that's Alex Jones, because we see. I think we have our radar a little bit better now than we did.
Our puffy red canary in the coal mine of ignorance. You know, I didn't think the canary would be this dumb and loud.
So if you can imagine the scenario I just outlined, no, they don't have to necessarily take down an individual post, but they can be like, oh, this guy's violating our community standards, which which we need sexual propriety here. We can't.
Our
this
community
is
standards is the most suburban fucking bullshit.
Yeah, but hey, can you not imagine a situation where with a different set of values that we would have taken down the account of someone who was saying, "Here, lads, where Johnny's," you know.
Yeah, again, hard to put my 2020 like mind back into the moral standards back then, but yeah, maybe.
It stands to, well, look, unless you think that like you're like Francis Fukuyama or whatever his name was, I was about to call him Fukushima, and that like we're at the end of history here now. In 20 years' time, we're going to look back at a lot of stuff we thought and be amazed at how bigoted and horrible we were.
Oh yeah, 100%. I'm ready for that. I'm ready for that to come, and just hope that I'm humble enough to admit it and change my views, as opposed to believing that everyone else is wrong, which I think does happen to a lot of people as they get older. You get tired, you get like intellectually lazy, and you don't want to change. You know,
my point is, we have no way of knowing. I mean, people are going to know more than... We don't know what that's going to be. Presumably, if we knew that, we'd address it now. We don't.
Yeah.
We definitely don't.
Yeah. What is the wedge social issue of the year 2040 that we, our age, could put us on the wrong side?
See, this is it. I don't think...
Like robot rights, artificial intelligence.
It could be. Maybe. Like, what if it turns out that, like, our...
Everyone's
going to
be vegan.
Animal rights.
It's going to be.
But you can. That doesn't even work for the example here because that's people sort of know that, right? That's abound. I think it's something crazier. Like, what if it turns out plants have feelings?
People knew about gay rights, like in the time periods that you've talked about, Manus. They just weren't.
They
like,
didn't. What's
mainstream
give
enough,
a shit?
You know.
In the same way,
like, I'm going to tell you.
So it's something that now we think, you know, society thinks of as generally wrong, like a moral wrong. It's going to progress.
Probably
like,
is.
I don't know what.
Neither
that
could
do
be. And I don't think you can.
No.
Certainly people thought stuff about trans people that. Like was they had it on a moral thing.
Oh yeah, the LGBTQ plus like the T in that like only has really gotten kind of mainstream approval very recently,
less than five years ago,
yeah. And that's
the T is
a really tough thing.
The T is
for
basically the G, but 20-30 years ago, in terms of even like the talking points of the same.
So like. I don't think we have any way of knowing what it's likely to be.
Everyone, make your bet. What's the thing that when we're old, decrepit, fucking holding back progress, old ass men, what's the thing our kids, our grandkids are going to look at us and think, you're disgusting?
I have a prediction.
Wait, does it need to be a political thing, or can it be the fact that I like to choke myself when I come?
It can be. We know that's wrong.
My prediction is that will be...
It's the fact you do that at the family dinner.
My prediction is that will in fact be more accepted, Gavin, and they'll consider you a pioneer in that regard exclusively.
And they should.
And they should. Yeah, yeah.
Like a granddad he's so woke, whatever the word will be.
Even when he's fucking self-conscious, he chokes himself. That's true independence and empowerment. Poor Grandmama Joyce. No one to choke. Gav's too busy choking himself. Manus, you had a real answer.
Sorry, Manus, you were going to say something more serious.
Well, yeah, it's not really an answer other than that I think we have to be very careful so that we get it to be true that in 20 years we're going to look back and realize we were so very wrong. Because the only way that's going to come about is by something that we currently think is wrong, you know, factually inaccurate. To be demonstrated to us that we were wrong about it. Right now, the avenues for that to happen are still all basically there. But who knows, in 5 years' time, as more stuff moves online, as the methods of controlling stuff and keeping in mind that, like, Facebook's not your friend, Twitter's not your friend. It's capitalism and they're supposed to make money. They're supposed to do what makes them the most money.
And some of them are very good at it.
Yeah. I want to make sure that there is enough, again, I'm going to use a big word that I'm almost certainly going to use wrong. There's enough heterodoxy out there so that we get to the thing that we should have known, but of course we don't. And when you think about it, we have no way of knowing right now. That's my worry about stuff like censorship and that. Again, without having any sort of real problem with the fact that I don't have to hear Gemma O'Doherty or read her when I go
Yeah.
But that's why I know I have to be worried about it, because I know I'm fine with
because
that.
Because you're comfortable with this. Yeah.
And so it's like, yeah, I'm fairly certain that she's not going to have something. We're not missing out. I'm fairly sure we're not missing out on some. I'm as sure as you can be, we're not missing out on some fundamental truth by sending her away. But I'm going to be sure of that. Of almost anyone we would do that to. And I'm going to be wrong at some point.
Yeah. Yeah, no, that's true.
At some point, the Earth does go around the sun. Yeah.
Yeah. And there's like countless quotes about it. You know, I hate what you say, but will defend your right to say it. You know, I don't know if that applies to like hate speech that incites violence. I don't know. Yeah, this whole thing has me frazzled. It should have you frazzled.
That's a good sign. You should be frazzled. You shouldn't be sure.
Yeah, I'm not sure. And and it's the kind of thing where you can't have hard and fast rules about it, and you need to deal with everything on a case by case basis. Because like, yeah, I'm not sad that Gemma O'Doherty is off Twitter. I'm not sad that Alex Jones is off Twitter. And Manus, it's like, I don't know if it was you who said this, or someone else who was like, whenever you get to a slippery slope argument, they're like, oh, but where do you draw the line? And you just feel like saying, at some point we will draw the line, but it doesn't have to be now.
We're nowhere near that point.
You don't need to defend everyone just because it might happen at some point. At some point, you draw the line.
And the beauty is you get to redraw the line every 4 years. Every 5 years, you get to draw.
Every 10 years, isn't it? Is that when congressional things are redrawn? I don't know when it is in Ireland.
Oh, no, I'm not even talking like it's jurisdictionally. I'm just like Gemma Doherty's too crazy. It's like, so where do you draw the line immediately before her? And then someone comes along who's marginally less insane. They're like, well, you already drew the line there. He's like, yeah, well, fuck y'all, I'm drawing a new line.
It was too hot a take.
Oh shit!
I agree, and you have potentially used my own words against me. I don't remember specifically saying that, although it does sound like something I would say. But I think if we're in the position, if we're drawing lines, the default position has to be we're not drawing a line anywhere, and then like you explain to me why it has to be drawn in this case, in this specific case.
Yeah.
As opposed to here's the line, you know, and let the leaves fall where they may. I think there has to be, and even in the most censorious climate you could imagine, I do think you want to have some platform to where at least you know what's going on.
You kind of want a letterbox thing where you just like open your letterbox and Gemma O'Doherty's just like, and you know, it's the gays who own Lidl that are actually the problem. And you're like, oh yeah, that's the crazy. I'm glad I know what she's saying, but
at a certain point, yes, if there's a rotting carcass in the house, it's probably a good idea to remove the rotting carcass, but it's probably a terrible idea to just Febreze around the place so you can't smell it anymore.
There's a lot
of downstream problems if that's what you do. So
yeah,
as much as possible, when someone's saying wrong things, you want to bring them in to the spotlight and go,
I also love I love that we're having this conversation in a world where we don't know the top level results of the US election, but the listener does.
Oh, that's going to be out.
Oh, hello.
From our point of view, that's tomorrow. We are recording this the day before the election. So, you know, you're listening to this in a very different way.
My lady companion.
Predictions, predictions, lads, because they're going to know, there's going to be no hiding from this. We're going to be wrong.
Yeah, fine. Right.
Yeah. Well, I think I think we did this for the last election because that's how long we've been allowed to keep doing this.
I won a lot of fucking money thinking Donald Trump was going to win that election.
Well, I was spectacularly wrong. I predicted that Trump would win the popular vote and Hillary would win the electoral college. So I don't know if that's more wrong or less wrong.
I definitely predicted a Hillary landslide. Like I was. Big time. There's no way this Trump fella's gonna get anywhere.
Last time I predicted a Trump victory. I actually thought it was gonna be a straight up victory. I thought he was gonna win in fairly convincing fashion. This time I'm all in on a Biden landslide by being the winner by the two sweetest words in the English language default.
Yeah, it's a crying shame that he's the best candidate that's there.
He's also fine. He's also absolutely fine.
I would never vote for Joe Biden in this country. Unless
he was Fine Gael, in which case I'd have to vote for him.
Yeah, obviously because.
But he would never ascend. He would never ascend to the top levels of an institution as widely renowned as Fine Gael. Like he hasn't got a touch on it yet.
That poser Joe Biden.
You think that's a statesman?
What's that?
You think that's a statesman? He's not even a doctor, like.
I don't have a prediction as such, although I think Joe Biden would seem to be about, but mind you, Hillary was seeming to be about to win before. What I really hope, for the love of God, is that Joe Biden does win and that he wins by loads. And that's not I like him so much I want him to win by loads. Like that country's going to be a shit show no matter what, but it's going to be a much bigger shit show if that result isn't any way close. It might even be better if it wouldn't be better because it would mean Donald Trump was going to win. But I could see an argument to be made of it would be better that one of them win by loads than it be close.
It's funny, before I jumped on, I was chatting to a friend of the show and roommate of mine, Ricky, about you know, just it in general. I was like, it's really funny because America is just auditioning for the respect of the world at this point, and I cannot wait to see how they perform in this audition.
it'll
be interesting.
No matter what, it'll be interesting. I'm going to go out on a limb and I'm going to be ready to be wrong. Joe Biden landslide. I think, just everything I've read in the build up, and maybe I'm just like completely blinkered and completely sucked into my own internet confirmation.
You are,
bias,
but you can be that and right.
Yeah, I can be that and right, but I think it's going to be Joe Biden is going to easily take the popular vote. And I'd say what's a landslide in the Electoral College?
They'd usually say a landslide.
Like 350?
That depends what you mean. If you mean if you win by like 4 percentage points, you end up with
I think he'll win by like 5 percentage points of the popular vote, and then however that falls in the Electoral College.
Yeah, 100 electoral college votes would be considered a landslide in some definitions.
That's an arbitrary number selected
arbitrarily.
What do you think of the possibility that Biden wins the popular vote by like shitloads, like 10 million in California? Like it won't be 10, but like Hillary won it by 2 million last time. So like everybody's 3-4 million. Wins the states.
This time around is that last time around I could actually really understand why someone would vote for Donald Trump. I really genuinely got it. I would never have made that decision, but I can see how you get there. This time I'm just kind of out of ideas. I'm out of empathy for that way of thinking beyond abortion.
Last time there was an element of what if, you know, maybe he'll mix things up. Maybe he'll do a good job. You never know. Again, I wouldn't have made that call, but there was potential. Now you've seen 4 years of what he is.
It reminds me of a great scene in Oh Brother, Where Art Thou? Where is it Patsy O'Donnell, I think, is the Pappy O'Daddy.
Pappy O'Daddy.
Who's talking to his campaign managers in a thing. He's like, oh man, people really seem to love the reform campaign that our competitor's running. Why don't we run on reform? How can we run on reform when we're the incumbent?
Here's a terrifying vista, which, like, if Trump is going to win, is how it's going to happen. Massive popular vote for Joe Biden. The Democrats win all the blowouts. So, like, your New York, your California,
electoral college,
and they win, and they fucking make huge gains in like Texas and places where they were never going to win, you know. But they come like real close,
Texas is only 2-1 for the Democrats right now on Paddy Power.
That's a massive mandate against Trump, and yet I think someone did
work it out, and technically, obviously it would never happen, but technically the minimum you need like 22% of the popular vote to win the electoral college. That is obviously your opponent getting 100% in the states. It's not going to happen, but that is a mathematical possibility. You get 22% of the popular vote.
So the terrifying thought is, and this is the stuff civil wars are made of, is that, like, technically by the rules, Donald Trump wins the election. But by any way you look at it, he's lost by like 15 percentage points or something in the popular vote.
He's not going to get 22, but if it's 60-40,
both sides have an argument for why they're digging in. Hey, I won by the rules. If it was pride rules, I'd have lost, but it's UFC but it's rules. Not. So, and the other side are going, but look,
come on.
He's spinning the ball on his finger.
Come on.
On the other hand, come on. Yeah.
So, like, that's almost the worst thing that could happen, because there'll probably be like secession movements and all sorts of things if that happens. I wouldn't really be laughing at that. That'd be really interesting for about 5 minutes, and then
I'd rather be studying in history than living through history, to be honest.
Yeah, exactly. So there's no one still listening to this program, because, like, there's nothing we said on this program that's better than the 10,000 other podcasts.
Good God!
That in 20 years, our kids are all going to be like, God, you used to believe in the concept of a nation state, gender, and the consumption of other once living beings. You fucking animal.
That's too predictable. It's not going to be that. Too predictable. But
animal won't be what they say, because they love animals too much.
No borders, no gender, and don't eat things that are alive are just too
easy.
Like, they're too, we're going to, like, I'm talking about something we're not going to see. Like,
yeah, too easy, because I could get on board with that. I could get on board with all of this.
I love it.
That I can't get on board with.
I love looking at futurism from the past. So, like, if you look at things like from the 70s or the 60s, which are like, what is the world going to be like in the year 2000? And it's always things like, cars will fly, vacuum cleaners will be cordless. But at no point did they ever consider that it would be a man who's using the vacuum. They just missed that glaring thing. And I'm like, all you can do is iterate on what you already know. And if you've no idea, the thing that will actually happen will surprise the shit out of you. Like, a man might actually stay home and run a house. And that always, to me, is the go-to for just check your ignorance. You don't know shit, never mind as much as you think you do. And maybe at some point a man might use a vacuum.
Have you ever considered either using a vacuum or checking your ignorance, Jack? Because I don't see any evidence of either of those based on your...
I bought a robot vacuum, and it was the worst one because I decided not to do the research.
So
you also got wait, what did you get? You got an air purifier because there was too much dust in your room?
My house is dirty, buy me a clean one.
And so for the audience listening at home, as if there's any of you left.
Yes, I sure hate working out. I better go on steroids.
But you know what I didn't do? I didn't hoover under my desk.
No, obviously not.
I didn't hoover under my desk.
So I guess in Jack's future, we won't see a man using a vacuum.
He really loves futurism. He's just waiting for hover cars. And
I swear to God, guys, I've spent a significant amount of time researching combination robot vacuum and mops.
Oh, I thought you were going to say and robot wife. Because, like, you're into futurism, but you're just not into modern life.
No. The more bestial things I like to be flesh and blood.
Like your flashlight. That's just a hedgehog.
No, the bestial things. I like to eat animals. What are you talking about?
Yeah, no one's listening.
A hedgehog flashlight would be really unpleasant, is my basic point about that.
No, man, when they get horny, the spikes get all soft when they get horny. Hedgehogs are the only animal in the world to get soft when they get horny. Let that sink in. Like a hedgehog does when they get soft.
Well, if ever you need a proof that we don't know what we're talking
hedgehogs
about,
hedgehogs lay eggs and they're fertilized outside of the body. There's no need for that.
Hedgehogs do lay eggs.
You had me there for a second, Jack, but I've hatched hedgehog eggs before. I don't know.
They can get soft and lay eggs.
Eggs this morning on toast. They're crying.
Yeah, they're delicious.
You put a little cayenne pepper on there.
20 years from now, someone was probably going to tell me that I shouldn't eat hedgehog eggs because the hedgehog egg industry is exploitative. But until then,
I'm going to eat those soft, prickly sons of bitches.
And hedgehog eggs, those are they're like Ferrero Rocher, exactly, yeah. Like Conkers. Yeah,
Ferrero Rocher.
Yeah,
that's where they come from. It's like in Futurama where they had poplars and then they found out they were like alive. Ferrero Rocher are actually laid by a hedgehog. It has to be a fertilized hedgehog egg too. That's what the hazelnut inside is. It's another hedgehog fetus. We should have known from how prickly Ferrero Rocher can be.
We should have known. I mean, and also after knowing that, I stopped eating Ferrero Rocher 2 or 3 years later. I mean, can you blame me? They're delicious.
They're very, very nice. It had to be very clear that they were inhumane before.
I was willing to take a punt for 2 years.
I was like, the cigarette industry is like, oh, we still have lawsuits about that. They might not quite be killing you. Yeah, I was the Marlboro man for Ferrero Rocher. Do you want to talk about the thing?
Yeah.
Neil Cicerega, is it?
What does he do?
He does a lot of things. So, like, I looked him up after I found this. So, he started off, he was Potter Puppet Pals on Newgrounds.
Yeah. He was also Ultimate Battle of Ultimate Destiny, also Neil Cicerega.
Yeah. And his most recent project seems to be, he started out with an album called Mouth Sounds, which was a Smash Mouth inspired mashup album. Which is, it's not great. But then went on to create 3 more mashup albums that are hilarious and actually jams. There, I said it.
I agree with the senator from Camden Street. Like,
because I feel like he looks like a weedier version of Gavin.
He does look like a weedier.
Every man's weedier than Gavin. Come on now. We're still going on Gavin
Come
being
on,
muscular.
300 pounds of pure muscle.
Gavin the Tank Carberry.
Those names, they wouldn't let us just... Yeah, hey, Facebook would not let us just put those names up there if they weren't accurate.
I will admit the fact that he looks like a weedier version of me is part of the reason why I love him. But listening to one song on its own, it's fine. Listening to a whole album, you kind of get into the rhythm of the mashup, like when the punchline of the mashup is coming. So like he's got a song where he just remixes the Ghostbusters theme song to be about like fucking ghosts.
Yeah. Bustin' makes me feel good.
He has a song where he just like cuts together the YMCA with Hans Zimmer's Time to make the YMCA fucking emotional.
It's a journey.
Yeah, and I think like over the course of like, you know, whatever it is, like 40 minutes or something like that, you kind of get into the like, oh, okay, it's based on this song. In this song, he says best. Oh, that other song he says best. This is just him cutting together all of the songs that refer to the best something. How's he going to end this? Oh, that's pretty clever. Move on. Like by the time the joke has been told, you're ready for the next one. And it just like comes in straight away. It's brilliant. I love it. Jack, what were your thoughts?
So I'm affinitive to it already.
I didn't spend that much time on it, but like, I remember the internet for what it was when like Newgrounds was a thing, where it was like real community driven. No one really knew what it was. And it was just like, oh, you want to do weird shit? Fucking awesome. If you look at the top 50 creators on YouTube right now, the top 50 channels, like 40 of them are old media. They're channels that are run by your CBSs, your ABCs, HBOs. Yep. Most
HBO is in the top 50 like YouTube channels.
Do you think that Last Week Tonight with John Oliver gets number one on trending every week and somehow is not one of the top delivering channels?
Oh, I wouldn't have thought Last Week Tonight with John Oliver was yeah. One of the biggest on YouTube.
Yeah, when you look at like,
yeah,
I thought they were all going to be like, I thought they'd all be like those children's YouTube channels that have like 50 million subscribers. And
yep,
like,
a lot of them are, but a lot more than you'd
and think some and some
are what we would
call and some game that media. Some game the system as well. Like some of the top YouTube creators just like put out 5 hours of content a day, every day, 7 days a week. Like a lot of the video game Let's Play guys are just like sticking up them playing video games. 5 hours each video gets whatever, you know, 20,000 subscribers, and per minute viewer.
See, that's what I thought, that level of shenanigans was so prevalent that I thought that's all the top 50
so
was
going to
be.
So put it this way, Manus.
No,
I'm going to say this
in
words you understand.
Jack would be right.
I'm going to put this in words you understand. The sixth most subscribed YouTube channel is the WWE.
Had you been using words I didn't understand before?
Words you can deeply relate to. Now, like number
two. Yeah, well, and number, I mean, that's crazy. But that's crazy. I mean, I can't, like, WWE isn't the sixth. Isn't the sixth most popular anything?
It's not
anywhere.
The sixth most popular anything.
And yet it's number two, but that I kind of
it speaks to me to the like mainstreamification of those big chunks of the internet that used to be for weird shit. Yeah. This guy is a fucking bastion of the weird shit.
He's a throwback to early internet. Yeah. Or like,
he's actually,
you know,
genuinely one of the first things I remember seeing this guy's videos when I was fucking 10 years old or like 12 years old. Like, this guy has actually been on the internet my entire life, and I had no idea it was him. I found out I was today years old when I learned that, and he's fucking awesome.
And it's also like, it's kind of nice to see someone who like his music, like, is, I think it's really good. And like, you know, however, like maybe a million people in the world think it's good. So like, you know, whatever, however much percentage of the world think it's good. And you know, that's enough. He is earning a living making weird shit for a few people who kind of like it, you know?
Mm-hmm. That's surely one of the biggest, like net positives of the internet, probably not even top 50 of the biggest net positives, but one of the big positives is that like guys who just could never ever have found a big enough audience to even do something like part-time can now find the 50 odd guys in every town.
This is the double-edged sword, and it ties back to what we were saying earlier. Let me say the same words in a different intonation. People who
find the 50 weirdo.
People who couldn't find an audience big enough to make a life out of putting their stuff out there have found that place. People who couldn't find enough people to make a life out of putting their stuff out there have now found a place. And Neil Cicerega is exactly... He's like the Jim O'Doherty of fun, weird stuff to me. I'm just like, no version of old media could have ever supported something this fabulous. And this is an example where that's really good.
And also, like, I would love if Jim O'Doherty just did mashups.
If she just did smash up,
you know what? She does.
I'm gonna mashes up facts.
She mashes Islamophobia with anti-5G. Every lobbyist. She mashes.
Every politician, every lobbyist, every think tank in the world needs to stop what they're doing, all make a mashup album, and the best mashup album gets to decide what we do for the next year.
Jesus. You're not going to like the guy who's going to win that.
Am I?
Think about how good Kanye is at essentially making mashup stuff. Like, I know what he does is a lot more than that, but like, you think if that was the rules, Kanye wouldn't make the best one?
He definitely would. Yeah, Kanye would make the best one.
Yeah, fuck yeah, Kanye. Yeah. Kanye's really good at what he actually does.
I guess of all the crazy whack jobs that could end up running the country, Kanye ranks somewhere in the middle. He's kind of a playoff against Denmark. If someone offered you him at the start of the campaign, knowing how bad it could go, you might take him. Yeah, we got every wacko on the internet here wants to run the country. I'll do you a deal. You let Conway run the place for a little while, or we'll just see how this plays out. The clock is ticking.
Manus, do you know?
Kanye, give me Kanye, please. Manus, for the love of God, easy.
Do you know what this is? It's the political mystery arse.
Is that going to make any sense to anyone?
Well, guys, we have our entire agenda for next week.
Oh, God, yes.
The political mystery arse. Yeah, I like it. It's great. I knew it would find a way back.
Everyone now needs to go listen to Bustin and then listen to everything Neil Cicerega does. Maybe not everything, just dip your toe in the water.
We described the mystery arse in an episode like very early on. It might have been like episode 60 or 50 or something like that. Go back, listen to that next week.
Political mystery arse.
Love it. Love it.
Yeah. And with that, it's time to... Did you review the beer?
No,
we didn't. We barely talked about this beer. What sort of beer is this?
It's a good beer. Yeah. Like, it's strong. It's tasty. It goes well with conversation. It's great.
Put a number on it.
Where do you give it?
I actually give it like a... To be honest, it actually hides the hooch well. It's a 7.5, and I'm going to give it an extra half pizzoint for for like leveraging that alcohol into more than just that into flavor. It's going for an 8.
Now, Jack was bezeeking Kazarni there, so just to translate for you not smart people, you know, you guys who aren't workers, he gave it a half point, an extra half point.
Good, very good. James.
Oh, sorry. Yeah.
As the only other person who filled out their application form in full.
Yeah, so this it did grow on me, but at the same time, it has a 7.5% beer ever not grown on someone as you drink it. That's kind of part of the experience, I suppose. Like, a bit more flavor did come out as I drank it. There's definitely a bit of hoppiness. There's the alcohol taste. It's, you know, it's definitely better than the macro. I mean, I still probably wouldn't go much beyond that. I think 7. It's probably
total score
better than every macro except
total score 7.5.
That's a hot score, and leaves us only one thing to choose to next week, and to the political mystery arse.
To the political mystery arse.
Little Mr. Mr. Name means I can't call the enemy.
The Final Countdown was brought to you by James Belfast, Jack Toner, Gavin Carberry, and Manus Cronin. Find us on social media at FAL Countdown or contact us directly on finalcountdown@gmail.com.